One of the hardest parts of getting older is feeling like something's off in your body, but not knowing exactly what. It's not just aging. It's often your hormones, too. When they fall out of balance, everything feels off. But here's the good news. This doesn't have to be the story of your next chapter. Hormone Harmony by Happy Mammoth is an herbal formula made with science-backed ingredients designed to fine-tune your hormones by balancing estrogen, testosterone, progesterone, and even stress hormones like cortisol. It helps with common issues such as hot flashes, poor sleep, low energy, bloating, and more. With over 40,000 reviews and a bottle sold every 24 seconds, the results speak for themselves. A survey found 86% of women lost weight, 77% saw an improved mood, and 100% felt like themselves again. Start your next chapter feeling balanced and in control. For a limited time, get 15% off your entire first order at happymammoth.com with code NEXTCHAPTER at checkout. Visit happymammoth.com today. And get your old self back naturally.
For a limited time at Verizon, you can get our best price ever for a single line. Just $45 per month when you bring your phone, which is less than you spend on too tired to cook takeout every week. Get one line on unlimited welcome for $45 per month with AutoPay plus taxes and fees. Visit your local Columbus Verizon store by April 2nd to save. $20 monthly promo credits applied over 36 months with a new line on unlimited welcome. In times of congestion, unlimited 5G and 4G LTE may be temporarily slower than other traffic. Domestic data roaming at 2G speeds. Additional terms apply.
Hey, everybody. Welcome to a very special TFL podcast because my dad is reporting live from a jungle.
I am not in a jungle, Tommy. I'm in the desert.
Well, quite opposite from the jungle, but the point is he's not in studio today. It's Thanksgiving week, and he's out of town, but we still wanted to get a really cool podcast in, and we've got a great topic today, which I think is very timely and which I'm really excited to talk about.
Yeah, our electric car is dead, and by the way, I'm in Arizona, so those are they're Arizona shrubbery.
I do apologize if you're watching on YouTube right now. I look very much like a mushroom. My dad and I share the same hair person, and she's not been doing a great job to either of us. So if you've been wondering in recent weeks why we both look like little mushrooms, it's because our hair gal has been having a bad couple of weeks.
Yeah, it's funny. She usually does a great job, but recently, you can tell, it's mushroomy, as you said. Hey, so let's not discuss the nature of our hair. But let's discuss the state of the electric car industry. But before we get to that, I do want to talk about something I've learned that's pretty interesting, and that is how regional car sales are. And I know that because I was just in California for the LA Auto Show, and then I drove all the way from Colorado down here to Phoenix, and it's amazing the differences in cars and trucks you see when you're driving around the country. Did you know that California electric car sales are almost up to 20%?
Wow.
Yeah. And did you know that Moab electric car sales are almost down to no percent?
Are you saying when you were driving through, we'll say, the beautiful scenery of Utah, you didn't see a lot of EVs, huh?
No, not a lot of EVs, especially coming down through the reservations through Tuba City, Tommy. There's not a lot of EVs. It wasn't until actually maybe 50 miles or 100 miles north of Phoenix that I started to see some Teslas again. And the other thing that amazed me is just how many G-Wagons there are in Hollywood. When I was there, I was hosted by our friends at Genesis, and they put us up at a very nice hotel right on Sunset in Hollywood. And I swear, Tommy, every fourth or fifth vehicle is a G-Wagon. And more interestingly than not, they're all new G-Wagons, you know, not the old one that we got, but the latest generation.
Yeah, and it's interesting, too, that that's a great point that, like, certain trims of vehicles also sell very well in various parts of the world. I remember Ford came out with the study a while back that showed what F-150 trim was most popular where in the country. And I'd have to look it up to remember, but I remember, like, California was very big on Lariat, and Texas was very big on King Ranch, right? And I think Alaska was all XLT. So it was interesting seeing. And, of course, certainly it does follow to some extent people's financial situations. That for sure plays a part into it. But interesting seeing the preferences. Same thing with the tire world. Like I learned really recently that in the Southeast, it's very common to see white letters out on new tires, where you'll never, ever see that in California. So preferences vary widely across our great nation.
Yeah, and it's easy to kind of get caught up in your neck of the woods and make assumptions based on limited data. You know, Obviously, we live in Colorado, and so we get a mix of trucks and cars. But you know, if you were to live in Hollywood, you'd think that everybody's driving a G-Wagon,
No.
which they're not. And I think that's why it's easy for some of the people in our comments to say that electric cars are dead, or that electric junk, or whatever we do a story about electric cars. And that's probably, or could be, because they live in a place where there are very few electric cars. Whereas if you live in, like here in Phoenix, like on a golf course, that's why there's shrubbery behind me. But I was amazed at the number of Teslas that are driving around here, as well as all other electric cars, plus Porsches, plus G-Wagons, plus Maseratis. You know what I saw the other day, yesterday?
What'd you see?
Rivani, remember that thing that's like
Oh,
up
the
armored?
Revzani? That's
Yeah,
what I'm using.
this it's like this up armored
Wrangler.
SUV,
Yeah.
and there I was driving right next to me, and you'll never see that in Colorado, at least I don't think you ever will. But here in Phoenix, I saw one in the wild, and the only time I've ever actually seen one was a couple of years ago at the LA Auto Show.
Yeah.
Rizvani, I think it's Rizvani, right?
Rizvani, yeah, the
Yeah.
Rizvani pink, I think, is what you're referring to. Yeah, very
Exactly.
interesting. So, I mean, the other number you can look at if you want to take the regional, if you want to take the data a little further, is you can also look at sales numbers across the US and across the globe too, right? And that's going to tell a very different story than where you are regionally. And those are also very important to look at.
Hey, podcast listeners and TFL Talk viewers. I wanted to take a minute to talk to you about a quick and simple way to sell your car or truck with the help of our new partner, HiRoad. With HiRoad's online portal, you enter your vehicle's VIN number or plate, mileage, and zip code, and you'll get competing offers from several qualified dealers in your area within seconds. You pick the best deal offered and follow through with the dealer to sell your car. No more managing scammy emails from buyers on Craigslist or Facebook Marketplace. No more time wasted on no-show buyers. No bait and switch with a "will you take a check" excuse from sketchy buyers. Now keep in mind, these offers will be for trade-in values of your vehicle. If you want to go through the hassle of getting more for your car, that's up to you. But if you want to sell your car hassle-free and fast, go to tflcar.com and click Sell Your Car in the navigation menu. Or click on the HiRoad ad at the bottom of the website if you're on mobile, or click on the column if you're on a desktop. HiRoad makes it easy, and we like easy.
Yeah, so I think, the question, are electric cars dead, very much depends on where you live, right? If you live in Los Angeles, the answer is probably no. Whereas I was just in Greenville, South Carolina, which is the home of the BMW Spartanburg plant, and there weren't a lot of electric cars running around. There were a lot of BMWs running around, but that's to be expected.
Well, I think it's interesting. The reason I wanted to have this discussion today is not to maybe talk about the hard data, because we've talked about that a bunch in the past. You can see sales numbers over at TFL Car and TFLTruck.com, where we go into those nitty-gritty. But there seems to be a really strong sentiment now more than ever against EVs. And what I mean by that is when EVs started hitting the mainstream about 15 years ago, right? You had the Roadster, then you had the Nissan Leaf in about 2010, 2011, and then of course the Model S. There was a lot of excitement about them and a lot of skepticism. And then they quickly kind of entered the typical zeitgeist within society and they became generally accepted. And then I think that excitement has grown more or less over the past few years, then especially with the introduction of electric trucks. And now we've hit this turning point with the Cybertruck, where it has become so politicized and so much of a value statement about who you are. It seems like we're going the other way, and there's a lot of not dislike, not like that's not for me, but resentment toward electric vehicles. I've been seeing that a lot online. What do you think of that, Dad?
Well, first of all, I'm looking over to my side because there's a golfer playing through. So if you see me do a face plant into the keyboard, it's probably because this guy just whacked me in the back of the head with a golf ball. So
No.
it's not me having, a sporadic attack of fear. It's just the golfers playing through. I would say it's even more than that. I think it's hate. There's just a lot of electric car hate out there because it's become politicized, right? And that's the crux of the problem, Tommy. People who have never driven an EV, people who have, only, watched their side of the news, have decided that EV cars are some kind of woke, some kind of liberal means to take their guns out of their hands or their trucks out of their hands, and have completely gone, I would say a lot, not everybody, but a lot have gone on the deep end and started, just making the EV the poster child for everything they hate in this world, because it represents to them a lifestyle, a political view that they find reprehensible and un-American. I find that to be a shame, because I love cars, I love trucks, and what powers them isn't really what makes them a car or a truck. It's what they do, and that is they get me from point A to point B. They get me there either towing things or hauling things. They get me there driving on curvy roads, and whether it's powered by electrons or dead dinosaurs, I don't really give a rat's. You know what I mean? What I care about is, does the thing do what it's supposed to do, and how fun is it to drive, and how does it look? And like I said, what powers it isn't all that important, because at the end of the day, it's still a car or a truck.
That's interesting. I mean, I think a lot of people would disagree with you, especially in the fun to drive aspect, because a lot of folks say that a lot of the enthusiasm for cars in general comes from your senses, right? The touch of a car, the look of a car, and especially the sound of a car is a big determining factor to people's excitement. And a lot of folks say EVs don't have that same level of excitement. And they always go back to the microwaving the turkey analogy, right? Yes, you can microwave a turkey, it'll cook it, but it's not going to have the same soul as if you were to bake one, or you can microwave a steak. What do you think about that discussion?
Well, I'm going to be really upfront. Right now, I think there are two EVs that are fun to drive. One is the Ioniq 5N, which has simulated shift points, which has piped in exhaust note or starship note, whichever one you choose. And the other
Starship
one,
note.
yeah, and the other one is the Porsche Taycan. But that doesn't mean that just because they're not fun to drive, I don't enjoy an EV. I have to say, Tommy, having driven every EV I think out there, except for some of the really exotic ones, I find EVs a lot more convenient, especially in the city. I find them to be a lot smoother, a lot quieter. I find them to be if it, let me put it this way: if I walk into my garage and I have to go on run errands around the house, go grocery shopping, the usual stuff, right? And I have an EV or I have a gas vehicle to choose from. 100% of the time, I will choose the EV. Now, that may not be the case if I'm road tripping it from Colorado to Arizona, then I would go for the keys for the internal combustion engine. But it's kind of the right tool for the right job. And I think this is what gets lost in all the political hate. And I'll take it a step further. I'll explain to you why I would pick the EV. First and foremost, it's just a lot smoother of a driving vehicle. So after I've been driving an EV and I get into an internal combustion engine car and I hit the gas, I forget that there's like this moment of hesitation where the transmission has to figure out what gear it's in, the turbos have to spool up, the internal engine has to start cranking. And then as I'm driving it along, you feel the shift, and you hear the engine note. And if it's around town, I'm not exactly excited by engine note, because that's not what I'm out for, right? I'm just trying to get errands done, as opposed to an EV where it's instantaneous acceleration. It's smooth, or smooth as I want to make it. It's very quiet, and it's almost like gliding versus running. If you know the difference, in a car you can feel that kind of throbbing heartbeat of a run, whereas in an EV you kind of soar and glide. And both are fun in different ways, but for running around town, I'd rather do the glide than the run.
Well, so you're
That's
kind of
my take. I'm not saying that's the right take. I'm just saying, for personally, that's the way I look at it.
it sounds like you're making the argument right tool for the job, right? So you keep coming back to this around town discussion. And I think that centers around a couple of things, right? What you're assuming when you say around town is that you have a consistent regular place to keep the vehicle charged. Is that correct?
Yeah, that's correct. Let me throw out another fact out there that you might consider. I remember when I was in high school and I was talking to my physics teacher, and he told me, "What's the most dangerous weapon you'll ever own?" And a bunch of guys in the class held up their hands and said, "Machine gun, bazooka." And he said, "No, the car, because it's the most heavy thing. Once you get it rolling, it's very dangerous." Then the other point that he made, which I think is also very interesting, is, did you know that most accidents will happen? I think that the statistic is something like between 2 and 5 miles from your house. And the reason for that is because that's where you drive the most, right? Everybody thinks they're going to have an accident on the highway driving to their grandmother's house, but more likely you're going to get hit, driving somewhere in your neighborhood, because that's where you spend most of the time driving. And so for majority of the driving I do, I like EVs better than I like internal combustion engines for the reason I said. So yeah, it's the right tool for the right job, but that doesn't mean it's the right tool for all jobs. There's circumstances that the thing just doesn't work very well, especially in pickup trucks.
Yeah, long distance towing, it's just the math of it. You just when you have so many inefficiencies that come with towing either a box or a car or a camper or whatever it may be, you really start to see the detriments of electric vehicles, especially long distance around town. Same argument applies, I think, where they, in a lot of ways, they are better. You get regenerative braking, right, which helps slow the vehicle down without putting heat into the friction brakes. It's a great thing when you're towing. You're able to recoup more of that energy as well because you are slowing down with a load behind you. That's awesome. It's when you have to start towing more than my threshold's like 150 miles is kind of the general rule of thumb with the Cybertruck, maybe even less with the Lightning, maybe a little bit more with like the Silverado EV with the big battery, right? But if I'm towing less than 150 miles, I'd rather have an EV. If I'm towing across state lines, that's where having a gasoline component comes into play.
Yeah, let me kind of break it down in a more equitable way, I would say. The problem with electric cars, because people may be wondering, when don't you want an electric car? And I would say the problem with electric cars is that they're heavy, and weight is always a detriment to performance, right? And so the heavier a vehicle is, and electric vehicles are very heavy, the worse it tends to perform. So think about instances where you want it to perform very well. Off-road is an example that people may not think about, but heavy trucks off-road, and that includes heavy-duty diesels, just don't do well. They're just too heavy. They're just not nimble enough. They tend to have to go through things, not around things, which is hard if you're in trees. And the same thing with an EV. The weight is a detriment to being able to rock crawl, to being able to go quickly over the sand. Same thing on the track. The weight, you can feel the weight. And the manufacturers, I just drove the BMW M5 Touring, which is a very heavy M5. And the manufacturer has done a great job. BMW has done a great job in hiding the fact that the thing is super heavy. But, when push comes to shove, going around a corner, you still feel that momentum pushing you forward. Like my science teacher said, right? You've got whatever that is, 5,500 pounds or something, or maybe more of EV batteries pushing you around the corner. And BMW can have rear wheel steering, and they could, have torque vectoring to mitigate that, but that weight is still there.
Yeah, I think weight is definitely a concern with EVs. Like you mentioned, off-road, but you want helping you up a hill is the stuff you don't want pulling you down a hill, which is what happens in a lot of these weighty vehicles, especially in loose terrain. We've experienced that ourselves. I mean, weight is the enemy of everything, except for maybe, well, I mean, I there's nothing I can really think of where having additional weight for the sake of weight makes handling, acceleration, braking, towing, maybe towing helps a little bit, having some more mass in that lead vehicle, but then you have to sacrifice payload potentially. So yeah, it's a problem across everything. I mean, a couple points.
Another problem, just I'll let you continue. Sorry. Another problem is tire wear. EVs just burn through tires, So while EVs have the benefit of not having a lot of maintenance per se, and when they do have maintenance, let's be fair, it all goes very badly, right? It's not like your fuel pump goes out and you replace that and you're back on the road. With an EV, if the things have issues, it tends to brick the vehicle, and we've experienced that, right? So it's either it goes or it doesn't go. But when it goes, and they generally do go for the most part, There's no routine maintenance, right? There's no oil to replace. There's very little brake wear because you're using regenerative braking. And so maintenance costs and maintenance schedules are much greater in electric vehicles, which is, like I said, a plus and in some ways a minus, depending on how you look at it.
So I don't understand now, because now it seems like you're anti-EV. So before you were pro-EV, but so like, where do you stand? You keep going back and forth.
Well, I keep saying it's the right tool for the right job, right? And so what I'm saying is, if I'm going to go run errands, I want an EV. If I'm going to go cross country, I want an internal combustion engine. If I'm going to tow, I want a diesel. If I'm going to go to the racetrack, right now I'd rather have, a race gas vehicle. But that doesn't mean that won't change in the years to come. EV technology is quickly catching up. I mean, think about it this way, Tommy. We've got what, two Model A's? No, two Model T's and Model A, right? Let's go back to the dawn of motoring, when there was a race to see what would power what, right? There were steam engines, there were electric cars, there were internal combustion engines, and there was a race to see which of those technologies would win out. And because of the state of technology back then, the internal combustion engine went out because it provided the most bandwidth for everything that we did. In other words, if the batteries weren't good enough to actually give you much range, starting a fire to go drive your Stanley steamer doesn't seem like a very convenient way to go for a road trip. But technology in the last 100 years has changed, and batteries keep getting better and lighter. And at the end of the day, unlike gasoline, electricity is everywhere, and you could make the argument that we're going to strain the grid by having EVs, but it could also be the other way around. You could actually plug your cars into the grid and have them be a battery source for when you need more energy in the grid. So I think these are things that the people who hate EVs don't necessarily think about or obfuscate on purpose, but in general, EVs offer a lot of benefits.
Well,
And right now, it's not for everybody, right? If you live in an apartment and you can't charge the thing up, it's a pain in the butt, but that's changing too.
I mean, the thing that happened in the turn of the century is so in 1905, there was actually there were equal portions of the automobile market. 33% was gasoline or internal combustion, 33% was steam, and 33% was electricity. Then in 1908, we saw the introduction of the Model T, and that Model T really democratized the car for the majority of the automotive industry here in the US, right? And that started to see a shift toward internal combustion. And then the final thing that really did steam and electricity in, there was one piece of technology that was introduced that solidified internal combustion as the choice of transport for the majority of the 20th century.
Can I guess?
You know what that is? Yeah.
Yeah, the cigarette lighter.
No, take a real guess. What piece of technology do you think came that killed the EV and the steam car?
Mass production with Ford,
Nope, it's
assembly line.
the single piece of technology that went from gasoline was a nuisance to gasoline made sense. And I'll give you a hint. One of our Model T's.
The electric starter.
Yes, that's exactly right. That's exactly the transitional point that made gasoline vehicles more convenient, safer than the other two options. So I'm curious, now going into the 2020s and into the 2030s, are we going to see an introduction of a piece of technology in the EV world that is going to be the electric start for electric cars? I mean,
You're saying
is
it's going to be a
solid
killer
state?
app? Is that what you're asking?
No, I mean, is there going to be one piece of technology like solid state batteries that are going to leapfrog electric cars ahead of the internal combustion engine?
Under normal times, I would say maybe that's the case, but we seem to be living in a time where a lot of people have decided that scientists and wisdom and hard-earned lessons no longer apply to us. And so they seem to want to think with their hearts and not with their heads. And when you live in a moment of time like that, I'm not sure that even solid state batteries are going to win out, because these people have decided that EVs are evil or somehow part of an agenda that they don't want to be part of. It's that, you can take, the gun out of my dying hands, right? It's that kind of same thing that I feel a lot of people have decided about EVs, and I don't know if you can overcome that. I mean, I could sit here and I could talk about how much I like driving EVs in town, but that's not going to change anybody's mind, right? What's going to change people's mind at the end of the day is if they're cheaper. That's what's going to get you to change your heart, right? When it's money out of your pocket and you go to the store and you've got two choices that are very similar, and one is $10,000 cheaper versus one is, $10,000 more expensive, then I think that's when true change or EV adoption will happen. And we'll see, in some ways, that's happening right now in the used EV market. We'll see if those people actually start driving used EVs or if they'll just end up on the, on the scrap of history,
Well,
scrap pile of history.
part of the problem, let's be frank about what we're facing here, is the government has come in and messed with the strings of economics to force EVs to be cheaper. And I think that is part of the reason EVs are so politicized, are things like the tax credit. A lot of American consumers feel like they are paying more in taxes to subsidize their neighbor's EV, right? Which really, really makes people upset. And
But you
whether or
know
not
what? People are selective about that, Tommy. I'm good with that. I understand that sentiment. You don't want to pay for your neighbor's EV, but why don't you have a problem for paying for your neighbor's farm, which is what we're doing as well, right? We're paying farmers not to grow stuff. That's the exact same thing. How about by the fact that we're giving hundreds of millions, if not billions, dollars to the oil industry, right, to help produce oil? I mean, that is all part of what the government does. And if you want to cherry pick the part that you hate and they ignore the rest, I find it kind of disingenuous, right? If you're gonna die on that hill, then you should also be dying on why are we paying farmers not to plant and why are we giving the oil industry money? And this list goes on and on. I just picked those two because those were the two most common ones, but there's a lot of them. So if you're sincere about that, why this particular hill? Why not some of the other ones? This is what our government has been doing, I think, probably since the beginning of our government. I'm not saying it's right or wrong. I'm just saying it, this is, par for the course.
Right, but this is a very concrete example that people interact with on a daily basis. Like if you look at oil subsidies, people don't know what the oil subsidies are, and at least I personally don't know how much I can know for a fact that my neighbor's EV was subsidized $7,500. There's a federal tax credit of $7,500 on that car. I don't really know how much Exxon is getting, right? But that is part of the reason I think that people think it's so political is because it's a very concrete, easy to establish thing that goes against something that a lot of people disagree with.
Okay, once again, I said people are, we're in a moment where people are acting against their best interest. My argument to that would be if the government's giving away free money, why not take it?
Sure, yeah. Well, I think that's a very fair argument to make.
I mean, at some point, if somebody offers you free, if somebody offers you, $7,500 in cash and you don't take it, that's on you. That's not on your neighbor, right? Just because your neighbor was smart enough to realize that, he or she, could spend less money because the government is out there giving away money than if you didn't take it because of, the fact that you're thinking with your heart and not with your head. That's on you. Don't blame the government. You should blame yourself, I think. Look in the mirror in that case.
Well, part of it though, Dad, is people can't take advantage of it because the cars are too expensive, right? And that's another part of it. I think a lot of people feel that that tax credit only applies to folks that can afford a $50,000 new EV, and it doesn't apply to folks that can only afford a $25,000 Versa, for example, right?
Okay,
So that
but can I just jump in here? I'm sorry if I'm cutting you off, but I mean the obvious answer there, Tommy, is we just leased a Leaf for $9 a month. Case just leased a 500e, $48 a month. That seems to be kind of in the Versa range, doesn't it?
Yeah, but that's exclusive to Colorado.
Okay, but I mean I don't, that's where I live. I don't know what tax. I know there's also these tax advantages in other states, right? I mean California has said that if the Trump administration does away with the $7,500 tax credit that they're going to bring it back in California. All I'm saying, Tommy, is if the government's giving away money, whether you're a Republican or Democrat, you should take it.
No, it's an interesting point you're making, but I mean, I'd be curious to see, like, that the issue with making this the comparison to steam and the electrification from 100 years ago, is that we didn't have the, and maybe there were in less concrete ways, but there wasn't that same incentive to go out and buy a car instead of buying a horse. You know, the government wasn't trying to give you $7,500 to go buy a 1915 Dodge instead of buying a 1915 horse, right? So that's, I think, the comparison that people struggle with, because there wasn't that paid incentive, and that's why it has become so politicized, at least in my opinion.
I think it's become politicized because it's a hot button, and media on both sides of the political fence today, unfortunately, makes money not by actually, covering the news. They make money by getting people to watch the news or click on the news or listen to the news. And in the case of a podcast, and it's much sexier to talk about, the if you're on the right side, just how much evil is being wrought by the electric car industry. And if you're on the left side, how much damage is being done to the earth and our planet by the internal combustion engine.
For a limited time at Verizon, you can get our best price ever for a single line. Just $45 per month when you bring your phone, which is less than you spend on too tired to cook takeout every week. Get one line on unlimited welcome for $45 per month with AutoPay plus taxes and fees. Visit your local Cleveland Verizon store by April 2nd to save. $20 monthly promo credits applied over 36 months with a new line on unlimited welcome. In times of congestion, unlimited 5G and 4G LTE may be temporarily slower than other traffic. Domestic data roaming at 2G speeds. Additional terms apply. For a limited time at Verizon, you can get our best price ever for a single line. Just $45 per month when you bring your phone, which is less than you spend on too tired to cook takeout every week. Get one line on unlimited welcome for $45 per month with AutoPay plus taxes and fees. Visit your local Columbus Verizon store by April 2nd to save. $20 monthly promo credits applied over 36 months with a new line on unlimited welcome. In times of congestion, unlimited 5G and 4G LTE may be temporarily slower than other traffic. Domestic data roaming at 2G speeds. Additional terms apply.
And somehow the truth gets lost in between all that. And that's the times we live in. And that's what worries me a lot, because people no longer seem to value truth, right? Because truth is just fake news now. And it's easy to smear everybody with that brush. And I'm sure one of the first comments in this video will be like, Roman, you're just an elitist. You live in Boulder, and for you, this is just, but like I said, I think we proved that, $9 a month leaf is not an elitist thing. It's an every person thing. And if you don't want to take advantage of that, I completely understand. But don't go blaming the elites in Boulder when you decide that because you feel that electric cars represent a political side that you disagree with, you don't take advantage of the free money that's being given to you. That's my basic point. But let's talk about what we started with. Our electric car is dead,
Well, hang on. I think one last point I want to make on that, which is important to realize too, is there's a lot of fear too that there's going to be the Grim Reaper date, where the government is going to come in 2035 and take away your 7.3 liter F-250, right? That's not the case. And I think in the US, in my opinion, which might be way off the mark, I just don't think that that is going to happen anytime, maybe in your lifetime, Dad, and certainly not in my lifetime. We might see incentives in certain states to stop the rollout of new gasoline vehicles on a regular basis, but no one is going to come and take your old cars, right? I'm always going to have that 1915 Model T, and I'm not worried that someone's going to come and take that out of my hands. And then along those same lines too, before we
before I go there, I think that's a justified fear. Let me kind of flip it around from the other side, right? A lot of people didn't feel like abortion rights would be taken away from them. And that's exactly what happened over the last 4 years. So I'm not sure in the country that we live in today that these kind of absolutes aren't possible, Tommy. Mm-hmm. So just as abortion rights were taken away for many women, I think on the other side of the political spectrum, there's a fear that, they will have their Cummins or Duramax taken away. And I think that might be a justified fear, depending on, which way you tend to lean politically.
So I also want to bring up the point too, and this is why I am not so against the rise of the electric vehicle, right? I am an old car enthusiast. I love my old cars. I have several old cars I'm very fortunate to own, and I think they're great. I love the experience of driving my 1984 Mercedes 300 diesel, just in the same way I love the experience of driving their 1931 Ford Model A, right? They transport you to a different time. And the argument that I see a lot is that the new electric cars are soulless. And I think compared to a 1984 Mercedes 300 diesel, there is some truth in that a new electric Mercedes isn't going to have that same amount of character. However, if you compare a new electric Mercedes to a new gasoline Mercedes, I think you're going to find there's not really that much different in the soul of the vehicle. People make it seem like gasoline vehicles today are these exciting things that pop and burble and bang and give you this unique experience of controlling a machine. Like, have you driven a new CR-V or a new RAV4? The engine you're driving is like operating a Dyson. Right? In more ways than I would say, in more detriments than positives, it subtracts from the driving experience and it adds to it. And even in like the enthusiast car world, there are some exceptions. A new V8 Mustang, phenomenal thing to drive, right? That's an experience. A new C8 Corvette, that's an experience. But even something like a Miata, I love Miatas, I've owned Miatas, but the new Miata engine, it's fine. It's not an inline six from a 240Z from 1970. It doesn't pop and burble and bang and give you these crazy sounds. It's just a quiet kind of machine. Same thing with like a GR86, right? It's a fine engine, but it's not phenomenal. And I don't think you're losing a lot of that new car experience by going to an electric car because, to be frank, a lot of new gasoline cars just aren't that interesting or dynamic or sensational.
Yeah, let's do a little sidebar here. This is something I've been actually pondering a lot, listening to various podcasts. You know how on the right side of the automotive world, there's a lot of people, especially in the southern parts of the United States, that think that the pickup truck, and I agree with them, is like the most American of all vehicles, and this is, what is the best of America, and God darn it, gosh darn it, you won't take my, especially diesel pickup, out of my cold dead hands. So, like I was saying, Tommy, there's people who love their diesels. There's also people in the car world who think that anything that's turbocharged is sacrilege.
Sure.
That you have to
Right.
have the purity of internal combustion cannot be spoiled, debased by a turbocharger, because it changes the way the throttle responds and it changes the way the car's dynamic works on a racetrack, yada yada yada. So, there are flavors of the same thing in the internal combustion engine world. Now, look, I think part of the problem has to be pointed at Mr. Musk, right? Because he represents the most successful, the most popular electric car company in the world, Tesla. And he politicized himself and his company, by putting his mighty heft, his political weight on the side of the Trump presidency. Now, once again, I'm being a journalist here. I'm not taking sides. I'm just, stating the fact. And I think for a lot of Democrats, that represented a huge denial of the beliefs that they had in the company. It represented kind of a stab in the back, because when I initially went to the store opening, when Tesla opened up a store in Boulder, right, his whole reason for the company was that the world is warming and that electric cars are the future, and that we need to get off of the internal combustion engine. And then, of course, he jumped in bed with the president, who doesn't believe in electric cars, who doesn't believe in global warming. I think that was seen as a politicization, if I'm being nice, or as a stab in the back from the other side. And so this is not something that happened organically. I mean, it was happening organically, but it's also something that Musk did very consciously, to his company and to his buyers and to his brand.
Yeah, I think that was a bold move, Cotton,
Yeah, true that.
from his side of things.
And I think he's already seeing the repercussions of that, right? This week, the news was that California is going to, if Trump does away with the EV credits, California is going to bring them back, and they're going to bring them back in a way that is going to be only eligible to companies based on their market share. So, in other words, any company that has a large market share, read Tesla, is not going to get those
That's pretty
EV
interesting.
credits, right? So it's a giant, you know us.
The whole thing's a mess. I mean,
Yeah,
it's
exactly. The whole thing is just a freaking mess, right? And what once again, what we're doing now is instead of actually arguing about the merit of the electric car, now we're just like it's a you F me, I F you, and it just becomes poke out. I poke my out eye. You poke my out. I poke your eye out, and we're both blind. That's where we're going right now.
I want to take this a step back for a sec and take the politics and the debacle out of it and just talk about the product, right? And my problem with EVs,
Yep.
because I genuinely like the technology. And I think, as you pointed out, for a huge, I would even say majority of the US, the technology would probably work better than what they experience now. My challenge with electric cars is not the batteries, it's not the electric motors, it's not even the charging rates. My problem with electric cars is they are synonymous with my least favorite trend in the automotive world right now. Can you guess what that is? It's a word that is like, it's like
Oh,
the
I know.
word.
Autonomous driving, autonomy.
That's one. There's a
Yeah.
second word though that's in line with that. Software-defined vehicles, right? This is the hot button take of the last couple of years, right? This drive toward interweaving your vehicle with your life and with your other technology, and everything goes through one central computer and everything is integrated into the screen, and there's no more buttons in vehicles, right? And there's subscription models for driver assistance technology and phone integration. That's a mess. I hate that, right? Because I want my car to be a fully formed product that I pay for once, I never need a subscription for, and has buttons and knobs. And I think the problem with EVs is they have been synonymous with one another, largely because of Tesla, and largely because there's no such thing as an analog EV. And there could be. This is what kills me about electric cars. In theory, it's in a lot of ways a more analog technology than a modern internal combustion engine because you need so many fewer moving parts. You need so many fewer sensors to make them operate. And you need the same number, if not fewer, computers to make them operate. We're not comparing the new Scout to electric to a Scout from 1960 that had only mechanical linkages. Modern cars have so much in terms of emissions equipment, in terms of throttle mapping technology, in terms of sensors and computers to make them function and stay clean and run forever. An EV could be simpler. My problem is there's no such thing as a Jeep Wrangler EV with wind-up windows and a button for heated seats, right? All EVs, it seems like, have these huge, ginormous screens where you don't have any physical knobs and you have to pay subscriptions. The problem is they're intertwined. And I would love for a manufacturer to decouple the two, to build a simple electric vehicle that has a return to switches and knobs and levers and is not connected to the internet in any way. And I don't really care if it's remotely updatable. I just want it to work as an automobile. And those are my frustration with the electric car market.
Yeah, I think you're talking about like this trend now toward electrifying classics, right? I mean, that's what you want, right? Where you take an old car and you replace the powertrain with a battery, and then you've got the best of
Yeah.
both worlds, supposedly, right? You've got all the knobs and switches of an old car, but then you've got
But
all this
my problem with
power of
that
an electric car.
is I kind of like leaving history as history, and I'm weird about that maybe. I just want to
No, I
explain.
agree. I don't like when times are caught, cars are time capsules, and when you mess with them, you're changing the time capsule, right? Now you've got a car that was built in, let's say, in the 60s, and you electrified it in the 90s or 2000s, right? Whenever that happens, and now you're stuck with a car that's kind of half 60s and half whenever. It just doesn't, it's like this weird hybrid that's not going to be cool 20 years from now because it no longer, it's stuck in the electric part of the world where you electrified it, and it's stuck where it was built. So let's just keep it original.
You froze there for a second and then turned into a robot at a million miles an hour.
Am I better?
But no, I understand. I mean, my problem is with an old car is you buy an old car to experience that period, that
Yeah.
era, right?
Yeah, I
Like
agree.
I drive that 1931 Model A, not because I want it to be fast and efficient, but because I want to experience what it was like to drive a 1931. And then you kind of get rid of that by going to electrification. But I want a modern car that isn't a caricature of itself, that's just a basic, simple, let's say four-wheel drive that I can buy for $35,000, that'll do 250 miles of range, that'll charge, I don't really care how it charges, just enough to get me around on a daily basis, that doesn't have a 15-inch screen. That's just a simple, durable, last forever vehicle. Because the reality is we've seen the data. And apart from certain terrible models like Nissan Leaf that have major battery degradation issues after a period of 10 years, most EVs are lasting well into 10, 15 years now with over 85 or 90% of the battery capacity. That's great. That's a fine level of reliability, more so than you'd see for most gasoline vehicles, in my opinion, of the modern era. So I just want a simple, basic electric vehicle that doesn't force me to buy a subscription model that doesn't have any autonomous crap on it, that just works as a vehicle, right? Like my Mercedes diesel, what I've come to love about daily driving that vehicle is if I want to change the radio station, I just push a button and it changes it, right? There's nothing in that vehicle that I really wish it had that a new car has, except for maybe airbags, modern safety technology. I don't want lane centering or adaptive cruise control or an app to start it from 300 miles away. I like having physical buttons and knobs and dials. I don't care about the software. I just wish I could get a new interpretation of that with an electric powertrain that's not $55,000.
Yeah, I mean, to me, that's true, and I agree. But the worst thing that Tesla has done is it's made other manufacturers follow in its design language footsteps. And I think the design language, yeah, I know we've been both fussing with our hair the whole time. The design language, because we're looking at each other on screen and just see my horrible hair. The design language that Tesla has, I'm going to say, foisted upon us. No door handles, stupid, right? I was looking at the new
Yes,
Jaguar, and it's the
stupid.
same bullshit,
Stupid.
right? Where they got
Yes.
rid of the door handle.
This is
Just
the kind of crap I'm talking about.
and
Yes.
it may be, maybe in a bigger picture, there were things that over 100 years came to be because they work and they work really well, right? Door handles, gear selector switches, volume knobs,
Yes.
turn signals, right? And Tesla
Yes.
has reinvented all that, and unfortunately, the other car companies have followed. And I think, if Jaguar actually wanted to be earth, be different and kind of not run with the rest of the automotive lemmings over the cliff, they would actually bring all that stuff back. You want to be original, right? Do some kind of
Oh.
a funky Target ad, actually make a car. What is it? Is it spazzing again?
Oh, you're back.
Okay, am I back?
You're back.
I'm saying if Jaguar wanted to be original, don't jump over the cliff with the rest of the automotive lemming, but actually bring back all that stuff that people love and want. That would be
Well,
bold.
and we see this a lot in many different consumer goods, and we're definitely seeing it in cars now where see a progress of innovation, which is initially perceived as a premium good, like in watches, right? When Apple released the Apple Watch, that was a desirable premium product, right? It went to technology, yes. And then we saw Garmin, doing interesting things and other even upper-end watch manufacturers introducing things like screens and heart rate monitors and technology into their premium products. But what happened was that became so mainstream, there was now a return to form where the premium watches are not going to have any sensors and dials or any sensors or screens or whatever. They're going to have mechanical movements and they're going to have old school dials and hands. I'm not really a watch guy. But we're seeing that in the car world, right? Where, like in 2012, when Range Rover introduced the first digital instrument cluster, people got really excited. That was a premium product. And then Mercedes did it and BMW did it. But then Hyundai did it, right? And then Toyota did it. And then Kia did it. And then it became not a premium good. So now we're seeing in the upper echelon of cars a return back to mechanical dials and gauges, like in the Bugatti Tourbillon, right? Which is
Beyond.
literally a reference to a mechanical watch, right? So I'm
Yeah.
curious if we're gonna. I mean, but the frustrating part then is that as consumers that can't afford the $4 million tourbillon, we end up with a Versa that has all these digital things which were once premium but are kind of just frustrating to use for a lot of people.
Yeah, I think you bring up a good point. We started this by asking our electric cars dead. And I think a lot of people don't realize how long of a product cycle it takes to conceive, fund, test, build, and sell a car, right? This is not something, except for maybe the Chinese, who seem to be able to do this in years instead of multiple years. For the most part, once that train has left the station, it's hard to go back and, add another car to it or swap out different cabooses or engines. And unfortunately, or fortunately, depending on your point of view, the electric car has left the station. And for the next 5, 10 years, a lot of the product that are coming from the manufacturers is and will be and will continue to be electric, just because that is what they've been planning for. And it doesn't really matter what administration is in place. You can't change that, right? You can't on a dime go to GM and say tomorrow, because, well, I got elected or my people don't like electric cars, you're going to stop building electric cars. I guess you could do that, but it would bankrupt GM and it would put a lot of people out of work. So that would be very, very dangerous, which I'm not saying isn't possible. But from a traditional standpoint, any of the car makers can't really change the way that train is heading right now. I mean, they can work around the edges, right? So you could build more plug-in hybrids, you could build more hybrids, but the electrification train has certainly left the station. And more importantly, this is a global business, right? We're very America-centric, but most car companies, including GM, Ford, and Stellantis, which is actually French, build cars around the world and sell cars around the world. So just because America has decided that the electric car is persona non grata, that doesn't mean that they're going to stop building cars for Europe, for Japan, for Asia and the rest of the world. So guys, if you're hoping that the electric car is dead, that train left the station 10 years ago,
I
maybe
mean,
longer.
we are seeing some pretty seismic shifts, like Ford can't really delaying their T3
Sure.
project, right? Which is their
Yeah, sure.
electrified SUV and Expedition. So we are seeing some shifts there, which I think is a really big deal. And then, I think GM announced they've got a new generation of small block V8 coming, right? But I think what it comes down to for me after realizing this conversation is it's not the electric part that's killing the EV for me. It's all the other crap shoved into the EVs that are killing the EVs for me. And like I think we've hit the point, people. We've hit maximum screen, right? When literally the entire dashboard of some of these new Lincolns is nothing but screen, or these new Cadillacs, okay, we're good. That's stop. We hit it, right? Let's go ahead and bring it back a step, maybe focus on lowering those prices, bringing back some more physical controls. And then I think we're gonna have to hit an equilibrium here where we have enough technology where you've got CarPlay, not so much where you have to pay $3 every day to keep the car from bricking itself, right? Like there's gotta be a middle ground there.
Yeah, and here's something else. I think there's two levers that electric cars can pull on or will are affected by. One is price, and the other one is gas prices, right?
Right.
So the second gas prices go over, I used to say $5 a gallon. I think it's more like six now, maybe seven. That's when people start changing their driving habits, because it'll still be at that point, especially if you're charging at home, it'll be a lot cheaper to run an electric car. So let's play that scenario out, right? This week, upcoming President Trump said that on his first day in office, he's going to institute a 25% tariff on goods coming in from Mexico and Canada. Do you know what the most popular product that comes in from Canada is, Tommy?
What is that?
It's oil.
Yeah, interesting.
So if he does what he says, so January 1st, he imposes a 25% tariff on all goods coming in from Canada. January 1st, I don't know, whenever he signs it, 5 minutes later, gas prices are going to jump 25%. That's what's going to happen. I mean, this is not
And if you think EVs are
me
expensive,
speculating. This is what happens.
yeah.
Exxon's not going to eat the cost of that. That's going to get passed on to the consumer. Yeah. So, now we're looking at gas at 350, multiply 25% of that, you're looking at gas at 450, like that.
Well, and the other thing there is like you think EVs are too expensive. Where do you think your Toyota Tacoma is made, right? It's made in Mexico. Where do you think your Ram 1500 is made? It's made in Mexico, right? Or is it the 2500 is made in Mexico, right? There's a lot of internal combustion vehicles manufactured in Mexico. I mean, if he does that, I think every vehicle is going to get more expensive.
Yeah, and then then let consumers decide if they want to pay 450 a gallon, or if they want to charge up their car at home at night at whatever it is for most people, 17 cents a kilowatt hour, which translate to 100, to 100 kilowatt hour battery, which translates to $17, which means you'll get about 300 miles of range for $17 versus going to the gas station and putting in $70. These are just numbers. I'm not pulling these things out of my butt. This is the mathematics of the thing. And, your politics can be what you want it to be, but the numbers are the numbers.
I mean, for me, I think the future in the next decade is not going to be full gasoline. It's not going to be full electric. It's going to be stuff like this, right? The new Scout with the range extenders. Yeah. What'd you say?
Range extenders. There was a bug flying around here.
Range extenders and plug-in hybrids, because then folks are going to experience the benefit, if they can charge at home, which is a must, of experiencing the affordability of living with electric vehicle, some of the maintenance savings, some of the brake savings, right? Some of the smoothness attributes, which are awesome, and power attributes, but then being able to fill up and extend that usability of that vehicle over a long period of time with gasoline powered options. So I think that this is brilliant. I used to hate plug-in hybrids because I thought they were the worst of both worlds.
Why do we have a truck up on our car channel?
Because I was in a rush and I couldn't find the Scout Traveler. With the,
don't let Andre know. He'll be salty. Thank you. Yeah, that's
cover that back. It's the same thing as the SUV. Imagine that was an SUV. I really think I used to think that they were bad EVs and bad gas cars, these plug-in hybrids. But reality is they may be a little flawed in terms of the physics of it, but they work really well in the real world. I lived for a week with this Volvo plug-in hybrid that I really wanted to see what it was like, 40 miles of range. Absolutely loved it. Did everything I needed to do, 85% on electricity, 15% on gas. I think it was a brilliant solution. So really excited for these plug-in hybrids. They really extend the usability of EVs.
You could also argue that those are already out there, right? The most popular plug-in hybrid, and it's very popular, is the Jeep Wrangler 4xe, as well as, the other 4xes. Everywhere I go, I see Jeeps, and more often than not today, they're the plug-in hybrids. So people are already living with that technology. It'd be fun. I know, like, Nicole Wakelin, who, is on Wheel Bearings, the podcast that Sam puts on. I mean, she has a Jeep 4xe. She just absolutely loves it. So maybe this has already seeped into the automotive market in a very substantial way with Jeep and with the plug-ins that they're selling, the plug-in hybrids.
That's a good example of you were making earlier of, if the government's paying you to drive it. Because I was looking, and there's some crazy incentives by Stellantis right now on 4xes. But for essentially, it was like $3,000 more than they paid for our base model V6 roll-down window Wrangler. You can get a four-door Wrangler Willys 4xe with 400 horsepower or whatever it is, 475 pound-feet of torque, power windows, a rear locker, every piece of tech you can imagine for $3,000 more. I mean, that's a no-brainer for the average person, right? So I think that, that 4xe is a good example of, if there's incentives out there, take advantage of them. It's a good vehicle, and it's pretty affordable right now.
You know, the first comment is going to be Stellantis junk. You know how that goes.
I know how that is. And
every time we come up with a suggestion, somebody always is like, hey, I had a Jeep and I was at the shop 15,000 times in the first 3 minutes that I owned it. And so it's hard to take people sometimes seriously when you've seen so many comments that are obviously just fanboys, fanboying and fangirls, versus actually comments that are thoughtful. So we appreciate thoughtful comments, I guess is what I'm saying.
You got it. Well, let us know, folks, what you think in the comments. Dad, anything else we're missing?
No, I think this has been fun, Tommy. Like I said, I think that electric cars are maybe not the future, or at least not the near future, but I don't think they're going away. And I'm hoping that as more people actually experience them, as opposed to thinking with just their heart or their head, they actually get behind the wheel of one and experience it and see what it's like. And then they decide for themselves. Like, at the end of the day, I'm just a big believer in choice. I think that's always been great about America, that we've given people choice, whether it is, what president to vote for, or whether it's what car to buy or what truck to buy. And anything that kind of whittles down choice, I'm against, because it hurts consumers. And it hurts us, and it brings the prices up. I lived in Europe, Tommy, and I can tell you that we have some of the best car prices in the world compared to the rest of the world. Yeah. I mean, the least amount of taxes, the most competition, and that has done really well for America. I remember when I was, living in Prague, I tried to buy a 5 Series, and I went to the dealer, and I said, hey, I'd like to buy a 5 Series. I'll do this not in crowns, but in dollars. And he said, great. I can get you one for like 60,000. I'm like, oh, that's not bad. That's what I'd pay for, you know, a 5 Series in America. And he's like, well, do you want a spare tire? I'm like, yeah, I want a spare tire. And he goes, do you want electric locks and windows? I'm like, yeah, I want electric locks, windows. Do you want those electric windows to be only in the front or in the back or on all four? And I went on all four. Do you want a rear view mirror? I'm like, yeah, by the time I got, it was $110,000, dude. 110, this is like 90s, you know? This is what the lack of competition does for pricing. So I'm very grateful for the fact that we still have what I would consider affordable cars, even though that price has gone much higher over the last 5 years because of, you know, a lot of reasons. Anyway, yeah, let us know in the comments below what you think. Thank you for spending the holiday weekend with us. Happy Thanksgiving for all of you who have just had your Thanksgiving. We're still about to hit it, and we shall see you next time. Ciao.
See you guys.
For a limited time at Verizon, you can get our best price ever for a single line. Just $45 per month when you bring your phone, which is less than you spend on too tired to cook takeout every week. Get one line on unlimited welcome for $45 per month with AutoPay plus taxes and fees. Visit your local Cleveland Verizon store by April 2nd to save. $20 monthly promo credits applied over 36 months with a new line on unlimited welcome. In times of congestion, unlimited 5G and 4G LTE may be temporarily slower than other traffic. Domestic data roaming at 2G speeds. Additional terms apply. For a limited time at Verizon, you can get our best price ever for a single line. Just $45 per month when you bring your phone, which is less than you spend on too tired to cook takeout every week. Get one line on unlimited welcome for $45 per month with AutoPay plus taxes and fees. Visit your local Columbus Verizon store by April 2nd to save. $20 monthly promo credits applied over 36 months with a new line on unlimited welcome. In times of congestion, unlimited 5G and 4G LTE may be temporarily slower than other traffic. Domestic data roaming at 2G speeds. Additional terms apply.